Welcome to the Brain Tumor Podcast with Dr. David Walker. The aim of this podcast is to educate and inform. The information in this podcast is general in nature and is not a substitute for medical advice from your own doctors.
Hello. Today I want to talk about what investigations are done when a person is suspected or is known to have a brain tumor. We'll talk about mainly the radiological investigations, but touch on blood tests and related tests at the end. So let's imagine someone goes to their GP or presents to an emergency department with symptoms that could be explained by a brain tumour. What happens next? So after the doctor sees the patient and examines them, hopefully in a detailed fashion, they will then often order a CT scan. A CT scan is usually the first test done because it's often easy to get and very quickly available, even in country areas. A CT stands for computerized tomography, used to be referred to as a CAT scan, which previously used as computerized axial tomography. And basically, it's a whole series of x-rays that are done in a circle around the person, in this particular situation, the head. And those individual x-rays are put together in a 2D fashion to give a slice view of the person's brain. So that's what the computerized tomography means. In fact, it was a big leap forward in the investigation of neurosurgical conditions and other surgical and other medical problems back in the 60s. So that's a computerized tomography, and the scans are very good these days. They've improved in their technology and their image quality over the last 10 years. And so not only can we get axial views, that is a slice view, but those views can be reconstructed into different angles. So we had coronal views, which is looking straight on, or sagittal views is looking from the side. So we can get a 3D image of the person's brain, and usually a contrast material is given. So that's an injection intravenously that goes up through the body and then into the, if there is a brain tumor, it may or may not light up, meaning that there are abnormal blood vessels that can be shown up by the use of the contrast, and the CT scanner, the X-ray machine, which it essentially is, we'll pick that up. So CT scans are a very good, quick, readily available initial test. They are excellent to see calcification, which is basically not well seen on other investigations, including MRI scans. And they usually give us a good indication about whether there is a brain tumor present or not. But the disadvantage is that they may miss small and subtle abnormalities. So that if a person does present, say, with a seizure, a small tumor causing that seizure may not be picked up. Similarly, if a person has a cranial nerve or skull base problem, which is where the tumor may be around the base of the brain, a CT scan sometimes doesn't pick it up. But overall, CT scans, a good initial investigation, usually the first test done, and gives us a lot of information to go forward. The next major investigation, and these two basically form the backbone of neurosurgical and brain tumor investigations, is the MRI scan. MRI standing for magnetic resonance imaging. And it's very cool physics that are involved. It's basically a person goes into a very big magnet, and that magnet can cause subtle changes in the alignment of the atoms within the person's body. And then when the magnet is released, that those atoms go back to a normal configuration and they give off a bit of energy. Anyhow, I don't understand all the physics about it. I once knew more than I do now, but essentially I can tell you the MRI scans are the workhorse basically of brain tumor investigation. There are different scans within a typical MRI scanning protocol, and you may hear the terms T1, T2, proton density, diffusion weighted imaging, etc. And all of these give us slightly different pictures and different highlight different features of pathology and brain tumors if we're talking about brain tumors. So a standard protocol for investigating for a potential brain tumor would include those ones I've mentioned, T1, T2, proton density, diffusion weighted imaging, but also, very importantly, T1 scans with gadolinium. So gadolinium is the contrast material that is given with MRI scans, and that shows up because it's sensitive to magnetic field. And like contrast in a CT scan, it shows where abnormal vascularization might be. And it's a very important part of the investigation and of a brain tumor. So the advantages of an MRI scan over a CT scan, say, is that they are very sensitive. They give very detailed images. And so that it's highly unlikely that a brain tumor will be missed. Sometimes it can be, but on retrospect, the tumor is often picked up. But extremely sensitive. And if a person has a normal MRI scan, it's extremely unlikely that they actually have a brain tumor. One of the disadvantages, though, is that it may pick up incidental lesions or abnormalities, which can cause anxiety, for one, in the person and the doctors that are investigating, but also lead to further investigations and sometimes intervention, which may or may not be necessary. So an MRI scan sometimes can be considered overly sensitive. An MRI scan does take longer to do compared to a CT scan, which may only take, 10 minutes sometimes to do. MRI scans can take longer than that, and half an hour, and detailed investigations maybe an hour, and that's unlikely. But they do take longer. The person is in a very tight little tunnel, and very occasionally a very claustrophobic person doesn't like having an MRI scan and can't tolerate it, and actually has to be sedated to have it done. And in fact, children, almost readily young children, are sedated or even given a general anesthetic to have an MRI scan. MRI scans also are not as readily available as CT scans, particularly outside major centres. And whilst there's dozens and dozens of scans in big cities like Brisbane that I'm in, and even in major provincial centres, they're not as readily available. They're not available after hours often. And also, they may not be possible to be done if the patient, person having the scan or wanting to have the scan, has an existing cardiac pacemaker or other implants, because those things just can't go into an MRI scanner. So MRI scans overall are very sensitive. They are the main investigation that we look at when we're investigating or when we're looking at a person with a potential brain tumour, but they do have some disadvantages. But I would say if a person has a CT scan and then an MRI scan, we can make the diagnosis and make a plan for treatment in the great majority of people with a brain tumor. And other tests, which I'll go on to mention, are very ancillary. They're not necessary in the great majority of cases. But let's go on and talk about those other more specialized tests, which may be used to further delineate the details of a brain tumor that's been diagnosed, say on a CT or an MRI scan, or even in some cases partially treat the tumor prior to or instead of surgery. That's actually very rare to have that situation arise. But MR spectroscopy is one test. Now, MR spectroscopy is part of an MRI scan, but it's just another more detailed protocol. And what it can do is actually pick up and detect the chemical nature of a tumor or a lesion, within a lesion being any abnormality within the brain, and compare it to normal parts of the brain and give some indication of the exact nature of the tumor. Now, MR spectroscopy has actually been around for a couple of decades now. When it first came out, as it were, there was a promise that it was going to be so good that it might even replace the need for biopsy, but it hasn't turned out that way. And in fact, I use, and many of my colleagues use, MR spectroscopy less and less these days. And in fact, we never rely on it to make a diagnosis. But it's occasionally used, and it can provide some useful information. But I would say more and more I would rely on, as an ancillary investigation, PET scanning. PET scanning means positron emission tomography. It's a nuclear medicine investigation. And basically, within that test, its patient is given a radionuclide via an injection into their veins, and that chemical, which is labeled, as I said, with a radionuclear tracer, is taken up by certain brain tumors, and that can be detected in the tomography. And that tomography is often linked with a CT scan. So the common types of PET scanning that we do in neurosurgery and investigation of brain tumors are FDG PET and FET PET. So FDG is the older one and more readily available. FDG stands for fluorodeoxyglucose. And basically, it relies on the fact that tumor cells, particularly intrinsic or primary brain tumors, take up glucose as a nutrient preferentially compared to the normal brain. And that then can be detected in a FDG or PET scan. But it's pretty non-specific, and a better test these days, although it's less readily available, is a FET scan. So a FET PET scan, I should say. So FET stands for fluoroethyl tyrosine, and that is an amino acid tyrosine, and it's specifically taken up by high-grade primary brain tumours and or even lower-grade tumours. But it's a very useful and specific test. Specific meaning we can differentiate whether something is a active tumour, particularly a high-grade tumour, versus something else. So there's PET scanning, and their PET scans are a very useful adjunct to anatomical imaging, that is MRI and CT scans. The other tests I'll talk about are angiography. And angiography has a long history, been around for about 100 years now, and was in fact, prior to CT scanning, one of the most important investigations for a person with a potential brain tumour. Basically, an angiogram is where a radiologist will inject a contrast material that's picked up by x-ray into a person's arterial system, and that shows up all the arteries in the brain and also abnormal arteries, and it can detect a brain tumor if that brain tumor has abnormal blood supply. But it also can detect the movement of the normal blood vessels, so that's where it was useful before the days of CT scanning and MRI scans. So it could detect shift within the brain and distortion of blood vessels, but we don't use it for that these days. Angiography is rarely used, but it's occasionally very useful in the workup of a person with a known brain tumor, particularly if we suspect a certain type of brain tumor that is highly vascular. And if we do suspect that, and I'm talking about tumors such as hemangioblastoma, which is a rare tumor, but it's a highly vascular tumor, and if we do an angiography that confirms that high vascularity, if we're planning surgery, we can use the angiography to firstly avoid diving into an operation or a tumour where it may get us into real trouble, but we can also ask the radiologist to embolise that tumour and cut off some of the blood supply. So embolisation means blocking off with particles. With a highly vascular hemangioblastoma or other tumour that we see in the brain, we can ask the radiologist to embolise prior to surgery, and that will help the blood loss control in an operation. So that's the ancillary tests: MR spectroscopy, PET scanning, and angiography. I just want to talk about blood and other tests that are done in the workup of a person with a brain tumour. It's very important that we do baseline blood tests prior to considering surgery, and they include simple things like full blood counts, electrolytes, liver function tests, because we want to make sure that the person is otherwise healthy and they don't have, say, some abnormal condition that will affect their ability to have a general anaesthetic and have an operation safely. Included amongst that would be blood clotting tests or coagulation profiles. Some would argue that that's not necessarily needed, but I think most of us neurosurgeons do really want to know if a person has an abnormal blood clotting profile prior to performing an operation on that person's brain. So they're the routine tests that are done: full blood count, electrolytes, and liver function tests, and coagulation profiles. But sometimes specialised tests are also done in the context of investigating, say, a pituitary tumour. Very important to do pituitary function tests, because some tumours produce abnormal quantities of pituitary hormones, and in some of those cases which surgery is not necessary in the case of, say, of a prolactinoma. But pituitary function tests are important for pituitary tumor investigation and any tumors around the pituitary gland itself. And in sometimes if we suspect certain types of tumors, we may order tumor marker studies, and that's particularly in some childhood tumors and occasionally other tumors in young adults where we suspect what we call a germ cell tumor. So tumor markers may be done in that context. It's interesting that compared to some other tumors elsewhere in the body, such as colon cancer and prostate cancer, there are no routinely useful tumor markers to monitor most brain tumors. So that's an important thing to understand, that we can't do blood tests to monitor progress or make a diagnosis of a brain tumour, at least not now. The people are investigating this, and it's obviously going to be a useful thing if it can be worked out, but at the moment tumour markers are not routinely done, only in specialised types of tumours. Now, some of the other tests that are done may include lumbar puncture. A lumbar puncture is where we sample the spinal fluid by putting a needle into the back of the spine. So that's occasionally done, not often, but occasionally is useful. It can be also CSF or brain fluid, which is the same thing as spinal fluid. It can be sampled from within the brain, from the ventricles, and that's often done in the context of putting treating a buildup of brain fluid, so that's occasionally done as well. So overall, I've covered the investigations for brain tumours, and that includes imaging studies, CT scans and MRI scans. We've talked about more specialised tests that may be done after the diagnosis of a brain tumour is established, spectroscopy, PET scanning, etc. And we've talked about blood tests that are done for investigation or workup for a person with a brain tumour. And that's all I wanted to talk about with the routine investigations for brain tumours. One other thing that I might talk about though is occasionally in some tumours, other physiological tests are done. For instance, you know, some tumours that are affecting the nerves that are related to hearing, a formal hearing test may be done. So that's particularly investigating acoustic neuromas or tumours around the cranial nerves that supply or are important in hearing. So overall, I hope that helps you understand the investigations for brain tumours. Again, please let me know if you have any questions or feedback about this topic.
Thanks for listening to the Brain Tumour Podcast with Dr. David Walker. Stay tuned for more episodes and don't forget to subscribe on your favourite podcast platform. The information in this podcast is general in nature and is not a substitute for the medical advice you get from your own doctors. Dr. David Walker is not able to provide specific information or advice related to your condition or any individual's condition in this podcast. But if you do have suggestions or feedback, send David an email to professordavidwalker@brisbrain.com.au.